The Pillars of the Earth by Ken Follett, read by Richard E. Grant. Prologue, 1123. The small boys came early to the hanging. It was still dark when the first three or four of them sidled out of the hovels, quiet as cats in their felt boots. They picked their way through the huddled wooden huts and along the streets of frozen mud to the silent marketplace where the gallows stood waiting. The boys despised everything their elders valued. They scorned beauty and mocked goodness. They would hoot with laughter at the sight of a cripple, and if they saw a wounded animal, they would stone it to death. They loved violence, and they never missed a hanging. They squatted in the porch of the big church, waiting. Candlelight flickered behind the shutters of the substantial houses around the square, the homes of craftsmen and traders, as scullery maids lit heated water and made porridge. The sky turned from black to grey. Soon, a group of young grooms and labourers and apprentices swaggered into the marketplace. They turned the small boys out of the church porch, then leaned against the carved stone arches, spitting and talking with studied confidence about death by hanging. The old women formed a group on the opposite side of the marketplace, as far as possible from the young men. The sheriff's bailiff opened the main gate, admitting the peasants who lived in the lean-to houses against the town wall. Some brought eggs and milk and fresh butter to sell. Some came to buy beer or bread, and some stood in the marketplace and waited for the hanging. Every now and again, people would glance up at the castle on the hilltop above the town. Then, at about the time the sun must have started to rise behind the thick grey cloud, the mighty wooden doors opened and a small group came out. The sheriff was first, riding a fine black courser, followed by an ox cart carrying the bound prisoner. Behind the cart rode three men, a knight, a priest, and a monk. Two men-at-arms brought up the rear of the procession. They had all been at the shire court the day before. The priest had caught the thief red-handed. The monk had identified the silver chalice as belonging to the monastery. The knight was the thief's lord, and had identified him as a runaway. And the sheriff had condemned him to death. While they came slowly down the hill, the rest of the town gathered around the gallows. The crowd normally enjoyed a hanging. They hated thieves with the passion of people whose possessions are hard-earned. But this thief was different. Nobody knew who he was or where he came from. He had not stolen from them, but from a monastery 20 miles away, and he had stolen a jeweled chalice, something whose value was so great that it would be virtually impossible to sell, which was not like stealing a ham or a new knife or a good belt, the loss of which would hurt someone. They could not hate a man for a crime so pointless. The thief was quite young, somewhere between 20 and 30 years of age, and of normal height and build, but his skin was as white as the snow. He had protuberant eyes of startling bright green, and his hair was the colour of a peeled carrot. The maids thought he was ugly. The old women felt sorry for him, and the small boys laughed until they fell down. The sheriff was a familiar figure, but the other three men, who had sealed the thief's doom, were strangers. The knight, a fleshy man with yellow hair, rode a war horse that cost as much as a carpenter earned in 10 years. The monk was much older, perhaps 50 or more, a tall, thin man who sat slumped in his saddle. Most striking was the priest, a young man with a sharp nose and lank black hair, wearing black robes and riding a chestnut stallion. He had an alert, dangerous look. The ox cart stopped beneath the gallows. The sheriff's bailiff, a huge man, slipped the noose rope over the prisoner's head and tightened the knot. Then he jumped down to the ground and pulled the rope taut, securing its other end to a hook in the base of the gallows. The men-at-arms untied the prisoner's legs and left him standing alone on the bed of the cart, his hands bound behind his back. A hush fell on the crowd. That was when the prisoner began to sing. He had a high tenor voice, very pure. The words were French, but even those who